Rolling.
What's up, y'all? My name is Ian Edwards, and welcome to the Soccer Comic Rant. And if you're listening to this podcast, you could also watch it on YouTube at Ian Edwards or Ian Soccer Comic Rant Edwards. And if you do, like and subscribe. And wherever you're listening, like and subscribe if you got the choice to do that too, and tell some friends. And if you're on YouTube, you know, if you got any questions that you, or comments, you know, just do it. Fill them out. We'll respond. We'll watch this. We'll read. We can read. We know how to read, and we'll respond to your comments, and we'll tweet this thing out, the audio. So, and it's available at allthingscomedy.com, among other places. And if you go to allthingscomedy.com, there's comics, some of the hottest comics in the country, that they have their own podcasts about different topics. And it's a good, fun time on that platform. So just go to allthingscomedy.com. Bill Burr has a podcast there. He has another podcast on there with Bert Kreischer. Tom Papa has a podcast there. Tiger Belly with Bobby Lee's there. And the list goes on. And our sponsor for this podcast is onthevolleyapparel.com. And if you go to onthevolleyapparel.com, they got tanks, tees, hoodies, and sweatshirts with soccer/hip-hop logos on the front of them. They are fly, and you can use my promo code ComicRant and get 20% off. So go to onthevolleyapparel.com and get yourself something. Or outfit your local soccer team. You could do that. And my guest for today so far, might have another one, is Neil Chakravarty by way of India. Lives in San Diego. He's a stand-up comic. He's also a Chelsea fan, and Chelsea's doing good right now. So he's wearing the jersey. He's feeling himself, and it's good. What up, Neil?
Hey, Ian. What up?
What up?
Yeah, also feeling pretty good.
Feeling good.
Yeah,
been a good week because you guys won the Champions League game last week.
Yesterday?
Yeah. Who did you play yesterday? Like, I'm so confused about everything. Everything's like...
there's just too many... Yeah, everything's happening at the same time, right? No, we played Atletico Madrid away.
Yes.
It was an away.
And then that bicycle kick from...
Yes, from the beautiful, handsome man.
I know. He looks like a fighter pilot. So, what do you... You know, and then you won this weekend.
No, you drew? We drew to Southampton.
So let's go back to Southampton. How did you feel about the draw? And how do you feel about Tuchel overall?
Well, you know, he's been given anytime you take over a team in the middle of a season, it's not easy, right? So you gotta kind of give somebody some time. But I mean, the issues we're seeing right now, they aren't that different from the issues we had before. Like, we're still seeing issues where our attacking play is, and Tuchel mentions that too, like, you know, we're doing really well for like 80 meters, but then the last 20 meters is where there is a certain lack of cutting edge. I mean, there's build-up play. Mm-hmm. What used to happen under Lampard is, and that's why Timo Werner had this, you know, he was getting slated all over the park, right? Because he was missing so many chances. So we're having a lot of build-up play. We're creating a lot of chances, but this, like, our attackers are really not finishing. I feel what's happening now is, and I feel like part of it is by design, because like he's gone to a three at the back, a more conservative, more compact two, six midfielders in a pivot there. So now we still have the build-up, but we are not even creating that many chances. So, which is why games...
Which all are creating points.
Which is
what Lampard wasn't doing.
Well, against these teams, to be fair, Lampard was doing too. Like, we did beat the teams we won against, like Newcastle, Sheffield, Spurs again, a narrow win, which is like almost identical to the way we drew with them earlier in the season. Just that, you know, we got the penalty this time. We didn't get the penalty earlier. So there's enough to see about Tuchel to say that, you know, there's been progress. There's not enough to say that the progress has been significantly of a higher level. So I'm still waiting to see that. And I think Yesterday was a great step, like against a team like Atletico Madrid, who we know what they can do under Diego Simeone. We played again a very controlled game, very professional game. But again, like those same things that I'm saying, like we aren't creating enough clear-cut chances. So we kind of needed a wonder goal. I was thinking it's going to come from a penalty, but it became a wonder goal from Giroud, and we got the points. And I feel like the team is at a stage where we need a few things to break for us, because it would have been really hurting the team if we, played such a dominant game. We're playing games which are very dominant in possession. It's just that it's not. These are games like, a well-functioning team should be winning 2-0, 3-0.
Should they? Look, we're not playing chopped liver out here. I feel like the media doesn't give other teams credit. Like, in the day, every team has changed. Every team evolves. And that means the league evolves. And back in the day, there's certain teams you'd expect to just walk right through. I mean? But I feel like every team is stronger, especially in the Premier League, and they can cause you difficulty. Like, there's no easy matches. But after a match, if a team that has a traditional top five ranking or top six or top four ranking doesn't like dust off a team below it, or that's supposed to be below it, the league has changed so much that Everton and West Ham are right on the door. And it's not like this is early in the season. They're knocking on the top four door at a point in the season where they normally wouldn't even be close to it. Like, it would be
the final stretch now.
Yeah, so this is the final stretch, and I just think the league has changed, and everybody's kind of still being stereotypical and kind of disrespectful to other teams. I do believe that Frank lost to some teams that even I would say he normally should have won, but it's like teams.
Yeah, the margins are very tiny. It's not like doing really badly or doing.
They've
really
shrunken. Well. The margins have shrunk.
Yeah, the margins are really, really tiny. So whether you fall this side of the margin or that side of the margin can actually define your season. Mm-hmm. I think, except for Man City, we're seeing every team in the league.
But even like Man City.
But I don't think right now because
we'll get to them.
Yeah. But I feel like there are so many clubs who are in that same situation where we know we have flaws and we are kind of like trying to rectify them while playing two games every week, which isn't easy for any manager, especially not a manager that's coming in the middle of the season. So, I want to give Tuchel as much time as it takes. It's just that I'm still waiting for that one real big boy performance that, that
it's too early. He's only been coach for a month.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Like I'm waiting for it. So, yeah. And, I hope now we play United, Everton, Liverpool, and then the second leg, Atletico. So this is going to be like a really critical period for Tuchel.
Yeah. Well, my feeling is he's gone back to the tried and true. He's actually using the team, with the exception of Pulisic, that Frank Lampard used to keep his job the year before. And that's the irony, he's got Werner in there and then Pulisic is out, but it's basically the team, that kept Frank in, with the exception of a player or two and he's going to try to true. And it's a good time to use them because they're more the players that he pulled out of obscurity, are more rested than the rest of the league. So, like a player like a Spilicueta, who's normally would be tired by this time of the season, he got fresh leg. Alonso got fresh legs. Rudiger was on the bench for a minute, so he's got fresher legs.
Did you see the about Alonso? Did you see the Giroud goal? Like the build up to the Giroud goal?
Yeah.
So Lee Hudson, our friend, and you know, a frequent guest on the podcast. He DM'd me right after the goal. He's like, I love how Giroud could score that wonder goal just because Alonso can't cross properly. Because Alonso crossed, and as usual, it hit the first man. Then it bounced up. It almost hit Mount, then hit another defender and went up, and Giroud scored.
He actually scored because the Atletico defender did a David Luiz defender move.
Yeah.
And passed it to him by mistake.
Yeah.
And Giroud reacted like he was 21, like instantly. And he just bicycled it in the back of the net. And but yeah, I think Tuchel's doing a good job, man. The name of the game is getting points. And he's getting points, and you know he's only dropped points for draws. And I'm worried about him this weekend as a Man U fan because we face you guys. But I'm also like, if we win, then it's a 6-point game, and we want that challenge of a 6-point game. So if we win, you know we're 6 points ahead of you, and
you're nine points ahead of us, I guess now.
Right.
If you win.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward for it because of that. Normally, like I am afraid, you know, because we're playing this informed Chelsea team that is finding a way to win. Yeah, like you're not like killing the league as far as in the final third, but who is besides Man City? You know,
I still feel we can do certain things selection wise that can allow us to
like what. So that's another question I was going to ask you. If you were Tuchel, what would you do?
I think right now we are trying too hard to get Timo Werner going.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are ending up playing a front two, because Tuchel has pretty much said that he doesn't see Werner as a lone striker.
Who?
Which means Timo Werner as a lone striker. He doesn't see him as a lone striker up front. Mm-hmm. So basically, you have to play two guys up front, right? And you have to play Timo off that other guy.
Mm-hmm.
And there are only two ways you can do that. You can either do it in a 4-4-2 or a 3-4-2-1 or a 3-5-2. So the problem with doing it with the four at the back is right now our midfield is too unbalanced to try that. Just having two players there is going to be too risky. So the only other way you can do that is three at the back and then play Werner off either Giroud or Tammy. But I feel the problem with that is like just to accommodate Werner in that position, we are letting go of a lot of other creative players. Like instead of having two fullbacks and two wingers who can, you know, create overloads on the flanks, we just have two wingbacks right now. And so I feel like we're kind of compromising a little bit on our attacking play. I would go with either a 3-4-3 or a, you know, proper 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3 and have like two wingers and two fullbacks behind them.
Who would your fullbacks be?
Chilwell and Reece James.
The guys who were playing when Lampard got fired.
Yeah, and when we had a long unbeaten run before that too. So
I feel like this is what Tuchel's strategy is. This, I'm going to win now, right? I'm gonna build up some points and get us in the Champions League, and then in the off season, right, when I can have an off season with the team, then I'll get these new players in the preseason, like into the system, and then I'll use them. But for right now, this is a salvage, a top four spot job. And we have to be like, basically they're playing long ball. Mm-hmm. They're playing route one team selection. You feel me? Yeah, like,
yeah, but that can lead to dropping off points though, because we've come close to dropping points a few times and then it finally happened at Southampton.
That's the league. It's like, listen, man, you drop points. Everybody else is dropping points. The only team that's not dropping points is Man City.
Probably, but we can't afford to. You guys already have that lead. We are trying to get there. So for like the United game, for example, for you guys, I think it suits you guys to have like a draw, come out with a point. But for us, it's almost become like a must win right now because we want to drag you back into that top four race. Right now, you and Leicester are way ahead.
We're not that far ahead.
I think you're like 6 points away, right?
6 points, that's two games. There's how many games left in the season, Ron? At game 25.
One of these games is the game that is in our hands where we can take some points off you. So that's why I want us to like go ahead and try and win that game.
I think you will try to win it. At least for the first half, you know?
And one thing I would say is that even though I'm saying like I'm not liking the way we are attacking players under Tuchel, because even in our worst form, like the 8-game slump we had under Lampard that led to his sacking, even in that we created 16 big chances in 8 games. In Tuchel's 6 games, we've created only 6. So it's almost a half, 50% drop off. But the good thing is Tuchel is aware of this because he's constantly said, so he's not somebody who's like, you know, trying to brush that under the carpet. He said that, you know, we're doing well, the 80 meters, we're not doing well in the 20 meters. That's just not finishing. He's saying even the chances we create, those are like half chances. Like we need to clear to create more clear cuts. So I'm very hopeful that Tuchel, with the experience he has, he's working on this and he will figure out a way.
You should be optimistic if when you're creating less chances, you're actually getting goals. What happens when, and the coach is brand new, like after a few months, you probably guys will start peaking towards the end of the season. There's enough games to change this whole thing around. I think you guys will be fine. What do you think of Tuchel, like as a personality though? Like I was watching, I think it was a Southampton game, and he gesticulates so much, and he seems to be yelling at his own.
He got a little frustrated, you know, that's what happens.
That too much is that it's not friendly. So I'm like, will you turn somebody off? Will you make somebody like a player too nervous to make a mistake in the middle of a game? Like
like these things, I feel like they're part of somebody's personality. I don't think you can like, oh, just because you're under the spotlight now in the Premier League, so much pressure that you can, I don't think at this level you can change that. And you'll see a lot of these things when things are going well, like say we end up winning a trophy or like, you know, in a year or so, we end up winning a league. These things, or even if you get top four right now, the place where he got us from, these things will be touted as positives of Tuchel. Like, you know, he's emotional. He is passionate about things. He gets the team going from the sidelines.
Yeah, if it works.
But if it works. But then if it doesn't work and the results don't show up, they'll be pointing at these same things.
Exactly.
Because I saw this same thing happen under Antonio Conte. Conte was a guy, if you see him on the touchline, he's literally a conductor. He's literally saying, go here, go there. And we won the league, and this was like the best thing that has ever happened since sliced bread. But
then what happened?
Next season, oh, he's frustrated. Oh, you know, he doesn't know how to, he needs to get a grip. So, you know, it's like any
when
other
it works,
thing. It's results
based. The media loves it, and when it doesn't work,
One thing I didn't like about Tuchel was this, and this is something I really have to point out. He kind of, Tammy Abraham goes off at the 45th minute and Hudson-Odoi comes on, which is fine. Like, you know, you as a manager, you can make a sub at any time. And we look better and we create a few overloads. One of those overloads leads actually the penalty that from which we equalize. And then he takes Hudson-Odoi off in the 75th minute, which was, first of all, it was really shocking to me, like, because I thought he was doing well. But fine, you know, coaches, managers from the touchline, they see the game a little differently, more analytically than we can. And that's his prerogative.
Who did he put in? Reese?
He put in Ziyech. Hakim Ziyech. And so I don't like seeing that.
Ziyech was playing fullback?
No, Ziyech was playing. So Hudson-Odoi was not actually playing wingback.
Oh, okay.
He was playing in a as an attacking midfielder,
mm-hmm.
and Ziyech kind of played the same place. But what I didn't like was after the game, he kind of goes and throws him under the bus, saying that, you know, well, he wasn't pressing well. And I didn't like his body language. I didn't like his
attitude. Yeah,
he felt like he was not in the game. And I'm like, well, the stats came out after the game. Mm-hmm. Hudson Odoi had the second most sprints in the game, mm-hmm. and he only played for 30 minutes. So I don't even know whether he was being totally honest about that. And he put in Ziyech. And I actually feel we had a chance of getting that winner. But that completely dropped off. They lost a little bit of our intensity in those final 15 minutes. So, and again, like, okay, fine. If you want to do that, don't go like in the press conference a number of times, like, because he said that in the, you know, the Sky Sports thing, and then he went and said that in the overall press conference. Like,
that's before you got the stats.
Yeah, like, and maybe he was trying to send a message to the entire squad.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's a little bit of a cop-out if you pick, like, the two young guys who you know won't throw up a stink to, you know, to do that. Because there were at least five or six other players in that game, senior players, who you could have said that, you know, you guys weren't carrying out the game plan and you guys weren't completely at the races that day.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it is his call to, like, you know, pick. Maybe he thinks, like, you know, I have these guys on board and let me use them to send a message. I didn't like that at all, because
but in the Champions League game today or yesterday, he started Hudson.
Yeah.
So he at least he's like, all right, let me fix this and let me put the confidence back in this kid that I might have taken it from. And he started him. So, and I, you know, like, and like, I'm with you too, because Hudson has been like in a team where they don't create a lot in the final third, like Hudson has come the closest to looking creative since Tuchel got there. You know, when I watched the Chelsea game. So I don't know, maybe he felt, you know, Hudson has been playing most of those games. Maybe he was tired and he's like, I don't think he's going to give more this game. So, and let me take him out.
But then you wouldn't actually go and completely trash the guy in press conference. You know?
I said maybe.
Yeah. So, and that's what made me feel more that maybe he thought, you know, this guy, I've been giving him a lot of chances.
Mm-hmm.
I can take a shot at him. And then the rest of the squad knows, hey, you know what? Nobody's immune. And then I'll start him the next game. So, you know, it'll be fine between me and him. So it won't be a big deal. But the problem is, in the long run, Hudson is still 19, okay? He is going to have a bad spell in the next 6 months, in the next 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, these things are going to get, you know, these comments, these... or, you know, the mental impact of moments like this will, you know, start coming back among fans, among the media, and it will reach the player too. So I just feel like you should, Mourinho in his prime, like, he will blame everything in the world, like, except blame the player publicly. So. Yeah,
well, he played in the next game, so I'll give him props for that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like a public apology, you know?
You're right.
Yeah. So that's Chelsea. And then this weekend, you got Man United. So, you know, just to talk about the Man United game, just to blend it into, you know, like, what are we going to talk, you know, about our thoughts on who's going to win the game. We played Newcastle, and we won 3-1. But I can't say I've never, but the way the fan base reacted to the 3-1 was
like a 1-3.
Man City beat Arsenal 1-0. They got more props for that win than Man United got for beating Newcastle 3-1. Like, you know, the description of how we played was, you know, described as like boring and kind of like uninspired, and we didn't look as creative, but we scored 3 goals on Newcastle, who ain't the best team in the world. But like I said before, this league is difficult. And when people set up against you, it's like, you know, no weapon formed against you. Well, sometimes them weapons prosper in the Premier League. You know, you can't get past them, and you can't score. We managed 3 goals, and the Rashford's first goal was fire. It was a very individual goal. He did his thing.
And then
they tied up, and then Dan James got his, and good for Dan James. And I feel like people ignored a lot of stuff in this game. Like, Saint-Maximin is a fucking firework that if you light him, it could go anywhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You try catching a firework that's like going all over. And the way Dan James helped Wan-Bissaka and Fred contain Saint-Maximin is very important, because that motherfucker, you know, they stopped him a lot of times from coming out of his own half with that ball. And I think that's just great, like, coaching and game planning, like pinpointing who's dangerous and making sure you put the fire extinguisher on that person. And I think I think in this game, Solskjaer looked at the challenges of this game or this team of Newcastle and dealt with those challenges. And then in between that, we got the goals to score and prevented them from using what they had to hurt us, except for the goal that they scored. So I think not only is good coaching, like I noticed those things. It wasn't the most flamboyant win, but how is everybody, the same people praising Man City for a one goal that they scored in the earliest part of the game and not scoring any more goals, but the Man United win was like pales in comparison. So that's the amazing thing to me. I'm not saying it was the greatest Man United performance ever, but they more than did with them what they had to do.
I think a lot of our fan bases right now are going through a period where, you know, we talk about teams in transition. I think our fan bases are also in transition. We really don't know whether we should be expecting this from our team every week, or we should be expecting this and be happy with it and take anything that as a bonus. So technically, Man United, second best team in the league, shouldn't, when you guys were the second best or the first best team in the league, you shouldn't be expecting moments of trouble against most opposition. But the fact that you're having moments of trouble in almost every game, I think that's what's really,
that's the league
messing with the minds of.
That's the league. Like, I think the fans did see the chances in the Man City game, or they don't feel like they don't fear those chances that Arsenal had against Man City, which they had a few. They didn't fear them because they're not emotionally connected to Man City. So a shot across our bow is worth way more a shot by some other team across
America. Yeah, true.
I just think people are just not like looking at the whole league.
Yeah, and so many teams, like we have flaws, right? Our team has flaws. Your team has flaws. So it's not going to be, every game isn't going to be smooth sailing, 3 points, clean sheet. So I think fans just have to accept that in this period. And you can always expect your team to do, your manager to keep progressing and move towards that smooth, level of performance. But it's going to take time.
Right. What do you think of your chances against us this weekend? It's the big marquee game. What's up?
I like our chances, but I've not seen a single game where we are like creating or scoring freely. So,
but you managed to score.
Yeah, but I don't think wonder goals and penalties are sustainable. So, Like it cannot happen too very easily. So, yeah, I feel like it's a pretty even game. I trust the defense a little better than I trust United's defense, but I trust United's attack a little better than I trust our attack. I mean, between the two teams, you guys have the attacker who is most informed. I mean, you guys have the, one of the attackers who's the most informed in the league.
Bruno Fernandes, yeah.
So, there's a difference maker right there. So, yeah, it should be a good game. And I hope we play Kante. I'm not liking the fact that we're not playing. Kante is now finally
fit. He's out.
And we're
he's
not
out,
playing
bro.
Him. Yeah.
He's out.
Yeah. I feel like that's a strategy that will eventually fail because I've seen it fail in the past. So
right now it's working.
Yeah.
Your coach is obviously, Tuchel is obviously, what's his name? He's a Jorginho fan and a Kovacic fan.
Jovacic fan. Well, I think one of the reasons why I have sympathies with Tuchel when it comes to that deep midfield role is because we have so much of imbalance. We have Kante, who is a defensive midfielder, but not a holding midfielder. He's a defensive midfielder who likes to move. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you have a holding midfielder in Jorginho who can't defend. And then we have a third guy in Kovacic who is great in the build-up, but is neither impactful in either defense or in offense. So he's going to take some time to like get all these pieces together, you know, but I feel like the path of least resistance is you play Kante.
Yeah, we'll see. So. We'll see. How I feel about the game. Hey man, I know when we played, we have a bigger chance of losing than when Frank was your coach.
Mm.
That's how I feel about this. Because the first, when Frank came in the league, he came straight at us and opened Chelsea up. And your defense wasn't that great. And we scored a bunch of goals. And then you missed some chances. And then the last time, like everybody got cagey and was not trying to give up a goal. And now you have your defense has been, I feel like, playing better. So it's going to be harder for us to score. And our defense got mistakes in it. So I feel like we can win or draw. Hopefully we'll win and we'll take that step ahead of you guys and put you in our rearview mirror. So we just can't open a lot. And this will probably be a game that the Man United fans will hate the way we played.
Hmm.
That's how I feel about this game.
Possible, yeah.
Yeah. Let's see.
But nobody will care if you get the 3 points. I think it's the same for Chelsea fans too.
Right. Yeah. Don't. It's a marquee game, Chelsea versus Man United. But Man United fans, don't be like, I already know how y'all going to feel about how we play. Unless we get blown away and surprised completely. So I already talked about the United game against Newcastle. We talked Chelsea and Tuchel. And a big marquee matchup this weekend in the Premier League was Arsenal versus Man City. And we'll talk about that before we go into the Merseyside derby. Did you see that game? How did you feel about it?
That was a pretty interesting game.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And it had all the flavors of like a proper contentious derby.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ancelotti did what he's been doing at Everton pretty successfully.
Did I say Arsenal versus City, or did I say?
Oh, I thought you said the Mussies, Everton, Liverpool.
Yeah, I said we'll get to that, but I just,
Arsenal, Man City. I saw the game, and I thought, this is like the Man City was pretty much like, you know, holding a kid at arm's length and just letting them.
Isn't that what they do with everyone?
Well, it became pretty stark here because But I think the most interesting moment of the entire game was, 4'6", Raheem Sterling getting over holding and Gabriel to like head the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that should be one of the ways Manchester City should not be able to score against you. How do you let that happen?
I was one of the shortest players in the league. Went ahead against two of the tallest players in the league. And I actually think
there was
Gabriel
too, like,
and Holding are pretty solid.
Yeah.
Like defenders, and they're coming into their own. Yeah, but yeah, that little separation that he got and that cross from Mahrez.
Yeah.
As I said, and he just pulled off at the right moment. Like he knew where the cross was going to go compared to them. And that could be, you know, that's with playing with somebody in practice. And
but I just
knowing
haven't
more
seen,
than the defender.
Yeah, I just haven't seen Sterling head a lot. So.
No, it's not his thing.
Yeah.
It's not his thing, but it just, you know, credit to Sterling, man. He's like staying on the scoreboard and just Man City period, like you said, like they're holding a kid at arm's length. It's like when they score a goal that early and they have this reputation of like blowing teams out, the maturity to not be able to blow the team out, but not let them score on you for the rest of all those minutes is pretty amazing. And like in the years past, Man City's offense was the impressive thing about them. But in this drive that they're making now to win the league, it's their defense that's the most impressive thing. Like there's so many games when they scored early goals and like, oh, they're about to blow these dudes out.
Yeah.
And they only score one more goal or no more goals, but they prevent other team from scoring anything. And that's, I think only like Everton scored on them, like in the league, you know, in this last, like.
I think Salah scored.
Right.
And I think we scored, but like we, for us, it was more of a consolation goal. We scored it like pretty late. Hudson-Odoi scored like in the 90th minute or something.
Yeah, like a garbage time goal. Like
So yeah, it's pretty rare for somebody to score on them, and it doesn't even look like anybody's going to be able to take any points off them between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, like to score a goal in the trying to see what time.
I think it was the second minute.
In the second minute, and then just shut it down for that long. And yeah, man, it's pretty impressive. And I think your boy Arteta, like not even like he rolled the dice. He started Odegaard and played Saka and Pepe. And I still don't know, you know, just because you get a player on loan, you don't have to use him. I still think Smith Rowe should have been in there ahead of Odegaard because I like how he links up with Saka, but maybe it's where he played him. But I like how Pep loves Arteta. And,
you think that was what was happening?
I mean, like
let me not get this guy. Yeah, let me like not yeah, get rid of this guy's fine. Mortgage. Yeah.
Yeah.
He probably knows how much his mortgage costs.
No, but he probably tried to not save his mortgage on the field, but after the game in the I've never seen like it's rare when one coach praises another coach as much. Like he praised him more than his own players who won him the game and gotten the 3 points. He praised Arteta more because he's just trying to trying to sell Arteta as a good coach, and he's trying to buy him more time with Arsenal, which is counterproductive because if Arteta turns into what he thinks Arteta's going to turn into, he's going to give Pep hell down the road in games that they have coming up. But he's like, you can tell Pep doing his duty as a homie to try to save Arteta's job after the game and to send words to Arteta's board to keep Arteta looking positive. So at the end of the season, you don't get rid of him. But that was a funny thing to me.
I can imagine like people in the Arsenal board like trying to make a decision, but then they're being played quotes on Sky TV of Pep can't get enough of this guy. Like he's going on and on. Like it's Pep Guardiola. Like he must know something.
Right.
So
It was just that was the funniest part, like after the game. But yeah, Arsenal lose again, man. And let me see where they're at in the league. You know, they down there, you know, not down there, but you know, where are they? They're 11th.
I think it's more than the loss, because I think you expect Arsenal to lose to Man City right now. It's just that when the game is 1-0, you expect any team in this league, and that is, and I'm including like Sheffield and West Brom or Fulham in that, to make a go for it in the last 15 minutes, because it's still a game you can take something away, because you just need the one moment.
So you don't think they did? I thought they did.
I don't think they did that enough. I think it was like a lot of going through the motions.
Yeah.
And I think the players felt like, you know, they had kind of accepted that, okay, this was a 3 points that were anyways never ours.
So let's
move on to the next meeting.
So you're accusing Arteta and Arsenal of what you were accusing me of accusing Pep of doing, kind of.
Oh, yeah, but from the other side of the...
Yeah, but from the other side of it.
Yeah.
I felt like Arsenal kind of tried. You know, they gave what they had. They just, you know, one impressive thing about Man City is their press. Like, they got this press that, like, if you start attacking them, they will press you back to your goalkeeper. Like, if you come in their half and get near their 18-yard box, they can press you all the way back to your keeper and then make you kick the ball back to them. Then there was this one play where Arsenal pressed City and somebody passed the ball back to, what's the name of their goalkeeper, Man City goalkeeper?
Edison.
And he kicked this direct straight ball that... Yeah. Actually, almost. The week before,
caused the goal.
And he did it again. I was like, this is not an accident. He can do this. And it didn't get to the player, but last week it scored a goal. I was like, this is like, we got on a range of weapons. Which one are we going to use this week?
What that does to the next team that are going to play Man City. Like, that's
if they notice
one of the... Yeah, like, that's supposed to be one of the most safest things you can do, to let just buy some time in a game when you're playing against such a great team. But now you can't even do that.
Yeah, because if you press them back to their keeper, he'll pass a ball to the forward who's just chilling with just one of your defenders, because all your players are up pressing. And now you're exposed. It's just this guy, he controls it. He just has one defender and a goalkeeper to beat. It's pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
It's pretty fucked up. To be in that position. I want to jump down to the bottom of the league for a second before we go back up. And last week I asked the question, do you think Newcastle will get caught? And I forgot what your answer was. What was your answer last week?
I think Fulham. I am on the Fulham train. I'm on the Scotty Parker train.
Yeah.
I want them to catch. Because...
Motherfucking choo-choo.
Also, that'll probably light an ass under Newcastle to, like, not just coast through the rest of the... Because what was happening was, somewhere around January, it felt like the three relegation teams were so far back.
Right.
That there's, like, this whole bunch of teams that really have nothing to play for the entire the rest of the season. And that's no good. So I think it's good that Fulham's getting some points. And now it's down to 3 points, I guess.
Yeah, now it's down. Now Fulham has 22, Newcastle has 25, and they're completely reachable. And then, listen.
And they play each other, right?
Brighton's touchable. You know what I mean? Let me see.
And you know what I think?
Newcastle plays Wolves this weekend, which they can completely lose. And then Fulham plays Crystal Palace, which ain't easy.
But I have a feeling, I think I looked this up a couple of weeks ago. I think Fulham versus Newcastle is the last game of the season. Let me check that.
That game is going to mean something. I mean, regardless of when they play, that game definitely means something.
Yeah, it's the last game of the season. That's going to be a crazy finale.
Yeah, that's the perfect finale.
Yeah.
For right now, it's like Sheffield ain't going nowhere. West Brom ain't going nowhere. They've settled at the bottom of the Lemonade Cup, and they will get out that glass last and second to last. And Fulham has a chance to do something. Even though there's enough games for West Brom to do something, I just don't see it. But Fulham play some beautiful-ass football, and it's great to watch them. Newcastle has a lot of good players on their team, like the St. Maximum and John Joe Shelby and Almiron. You know, it'll also be weird to see those guys go down. You don't want to see a St. Maximum go down, but Fulham just overall plays better football. Brighton, I don't want them to go down because of the brand of football that they play.
But they're an amazing team. They are literally one really half-decent goal scorer away from being a top half team.
Yeah. So is Fulham, kind of. You know,
I think Fulham needs more, but Brighton, if you see like their defense, I think I was looking at some of these underlying stats. Like they're among the top four in the league. They're just missing a few, very few pieces. I think Lampard is an excellent coach. And like even the last game, Crystal Palace Brighton. Crystal Palace won it last kick of the game. 2-1.
Yes, that shit, the Benteke. Oh my, what a heartbreak. Listen, you know, I used to hate Brighton, man, because they fired Chris Hughton and got this. But, you know, he kind of won me over because he's been playing brilliant football. But if any person in the league my heart breaks for is Benteke, just like all the promise that has never been realized. And then in this game, like he got like that last kick, like across the goal, poor goalkeeper could not reach it, perfect angle. And he peeled off on time and he caught it right. You know, normally Benteke would just hit that off the post or something. Like, that's how bad of a luck he's been having. And he protracted that ball correctly in the net. His teammates were so happy for him. And it's almost as like, his testimonial goal. You know what I mean? But that was pretty.
They had like 3 shots entire game. Brighton had 24.
Yeah.
It's just crazy how they can score like 2 and Brighton scored 1.
Yeah. Brighton, first of all, was it whose goal was it?
Brighton had 75% of the possession. It was an insane game.
That's what I'm telling you. Like, so you said they need a scorer. I said they need a scorer too. But I also feel like Fulham has high possession too.
Yeah.
And I think both teams at the transfer window made moves that kept them in the. Well, Brighton definitely is still in the league, but they made moves and got players that could both keep them in the league, you know, like attacking players. But I think the Fulham needs a scorer too. And like you said, Brighton definitely needs one. I agree with you. But Christian Benteke.
A friend of mine is a Liverpool fan is saying, you know what, it looks like we do need a number 9 to compete with Firmino.
So let me ask Let me ask you a crazy question, right? So Brighton's coach, Graham Potter, right?
Yeah.
What if he was the coach of Chelsea?
I think he'd do well. I think he has a way of playing that with better players will get better results. And it's not just this season.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's even last season, I think he showed that. So it's not like somebody who's just had a flash in the pan. And I think his system is good at both ends of the pitch. Mm-hmm. Like it's defensively good. It's even offensively good. Mm-hmm. So definitely with good players in those positions, I think he'll I think he'll do really well.
Yeah, if he had Chelsea.
Yeah.
I mean,
he wouldn't win the league because I don't think anybody's going to win the league. But he would have gotten probably, yeah, he would be in the top four.
He wouldn't be out the top four right now.
Yeah, he wouldn't be out of place.
And I wouldn't argue with that.
Yeah.
That's so fucking bananas, bro. Like,
you know, like with managers, a lot of it is down to, it's not like players, right? Where everybody starts around the same time in an academy and then they keep moving up, having the senior debuts around the same time. Mm-hmm. Managers, it can go all over the place. You have like so many points of entry. It may take you a very long time to go to get to a place where, I mean, you look at Maurizio Sarri, you know, the dude, he was a banker to the age of 40. He left his job, started coaching absolutely the most bottom of teams, like amateur teams you can. And it took him almost 25, 30 years, but he finally did win a European medal.
He rose up enough to get fired from Chelsea.
Yeah, which puts you
in the
absolute upper echelon of Jose Mourinho, Carlo Ancelotti,
Conte,
Antonio Conte, Luis Felipe Scolari.
Except they won something.
No, he won too. Maurizio Sarri won the Europa League.
With Chelsea. Oh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah.
And then he won Serie A with Juventus. Yeah, yeah. So,
I mean, we could win Serie A before Pirlo got there.
So I'm Juventus. Saying like people like Graham Potter, it'll be interesting to see where their careers go. Mm-hmm. Hey, Martin's here.
The poll. Martin, let me ask you a question.
Tell me.
So we know Spurs suck, right?
No, we don't.
Yeah,
for nothing. If you check the news, they just won 4-0.
Yeah, Europa League. Yeah. All right. I mean, you cling to what you can cling to. But let me, I got a proposition for you. So let me ask you, Neil.
Tell me.
Would you switch Potter for Tuchel?
No.
No? Why?
With who for who?
Tuchel. Graham Potter. And as a coach of Chelsea.
I wouldn't switch Potter for Lampard too when Lampard was there.
You wouldn't?
Why?
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Why?
Because,
why
not? Because I felt they were doing a good enough job too. So for me to go to that next level, it'll have to be somebody. Because you see all the things I'm telling about Brighton, where you're doing really well. You're just missing out on those couple of pieces. If you look at all the underlying stats of Chelsea under Lampard, right up there too. So, and even Tuchel, like he's got those things in his repertoire. I don't see him making those obvious mistakes that should ask me to go in for somebody like Potter, even though I rate Potter as a manager.
I would take Potter over Lampard, but I wouldn't take him over Tuchel. Now, Martin.
Why? What am I not seeing?
What
am I not seeing?
What do you mean?
I mean, what am I not seeing about Potter? Why would you like to have him ahead of all those people? Why?
Because we're looking at Brighton Hove, right? Do you watch them play?
Well, they might get relegated.
Newcastle first, but they might get relegated.
Newcastle is more pragmatic, at least.
Or what?
I think Newcastle is more pragmatic in the way they play.
Yeah, they are
lately, especially when Wilson is injured. They're not, but I think.
But listen, like I don't know if you watch. Right? Let me lead you into this.
Okay.
Like there is no question when you watch Brighton Hove, they are playing the type of football that you need top players to play. But they're playing that type of football with players who you would not necessarily think could play that type of football. Now, if you took this coach who made those players play upper level football and gave him some goal scorers on a better team with players with the skill to play that type of football, would you take him over Mourinho?
Never.
Never? Why?
He didn't prove anything so far. He didn't win anything. He didn't prove anything. His football is very ineffective. His team is not scoring goals.
But why is his team not scoring goals? Is it the quality of the forward that he has?
I don't know. It's not like they create that many chances. It's
a lot of could chances.
You hit him? Could you hit him with the stats? Hold on. Oh, no. You have to hear the stats. Hit him with the stats. Yeah. Data this motherfucker.
They have the 8th best XG in the league. So
what's 8th best what?
Expected goals in the league. So basically, they're just missing one goal scorer, and they have the second worst goalkeeper in the league. So they're going through something similar to on the goalkeeping side that we went through last season with Kepa. So I really feel like they're one goalkeeper and a goal scorer away from being like a top, at least a top half team. They can even like push top 6.
Okay, I'm going to hit you. You hit me with stats, I hit you with facts. There was a team in the Premier League history like 7 or 8 years ago called Blackpool. And they played very attractive football, and they went down, I believe, after 1 or 2 seasons. And everybody was saying, oh, they're playing such a beautiful football, but so it didn't lead to anything. So I agree that they're nice to watch, but there's no final product. And I'm not saying it's...
No, but even there's no final product because their best goal scorer is Neil Mopé.
So okay, so what's good about Graham Potter? What's good about it?
Because they're very attacking. The team looks cohesive, and you could tell he's missing the financial quality buy a goal scorer.
He just bought 2 Polish players for record money.
Record money for who?
For Polish players.
That's a key word. Like, first of all, you're buying Polish players. The only Polish player worth a damn is Lewandowski. So, and then maybe a few. But are there any other quality scoring Polish players? Let's be honest.
At least 4 of them. There's Milik for now Olympique Marseille. He was at Naples. And there is Piątek, who was at Milan. Now it's Hertha Berlin. Mm-hmm. And then you have a couple more wingers.
Yeah, but they're not the ones that Graham Potter bought. So, boom. I'm just saying, this guy can coach, and I don't even like him. But when I watched him play,
comparing to Mourinho, who won everything in football, you know, like this guy didn't win anything ever.
Not yet.
No, that is true. He's
younger. How is he supposed to win like Mourinho when he's younger and he's just getting his chance?
Mourinho in his age was already winning a lot of things.
But Mourinho coached Porto, which is not a slouch. Like Porto didn't come in the league and grab one of the top teams. Like Mourinho came into the Portuguese league and he came into it right place, right time. He was a great coach. You know what I mean? It's like Brighton Hove, but they ain't got no history. You know, this Brighton Hove fans gonna be mad, but come on.
Yeah,
they got the best seagull logo of all time, though.
Well, I think they're better last year than this year, so I don't see progress. I see regress.
And that's the history that they got, the best seagull logo. Well, no, that's not good.
No, but guys, they're better than last year. They were much better last season than this season. You know, the last season they were just better, beating big teams.
I think it's hurt them, though, too, that some of the really difference makers that they do have, like Tariq Lamptey, he's been injured.
He's been injured for pretty much half the season now.
If you want to look for one manager, if you want to look for one manager who is overachieving year after year after year after year, look at Sean Dyche. Look at him, in my opinion, than Potter, rather. Because Sean Dyche delivers every single year. He didn't. He went down once, but they were like really embarrassingly bad in terms of roster. But right now, I think he still has one of the best, if not the worst rosters, maybe second worst roster in the league after Sheffield United. And he's constantly overachieving every year.
I don't think.
Name one outstanding player on Burnley. One.
That's not the argument I'm trying to make. Because we're talking like attractive, effective football.
But Sean Dyche plays a brand of football that no half-decent team will ever touch him with a barge pole, you know?
Yeah. He doesn't win you the type of football. Like when you see Sean Dyche's coach, you're not saying, hey, if I get this coach and put him on a better... He's not proven to you that if he has better players, he can win you the league.
If Sean Dyche's brand of football will remain the same... he'll actually bring upper level teams down.
Down.
So he'll try and play, right. He'll try and play Tarkowski and Ashley Wood kind of brand of football.
I don't know, man. I think like he's overachieving and proving everybody wrong year after year, where everybody's seeing Burnley as potentially one of three worst teams in the league.
I think that is true. I think Burnley are right. They are overachieving.
Better players. Fulham, West Brom, I would seem have better players than Burnley. Maybe Sheffield United doesn't. You know, that's it. But definitely Brighton has better players than Burnley. Definitely,
and they have better players because they've been coached into playing better, and that's the point.
No, he has no money whatsoever. They never buy anybody.
Brighton Hove ain't got no money either.
Yeah, they're buying players.
You can't just give them money to make your argument.
They have Lallana, they have Lamptey, they have a bunch of like...
Lallana, he plays three games a season. They got him because he's at the end of his career.
But even Neil Mope was kind of a name, you know.
Like, yeah, Mope. Mope and Conley are divers. They're little dudes who want to get near the box, and they want you to sneeze so they can go down. This team is balling with nothing. We don't have a lot of time, so because I got to go.
I still give my heads up towards Sean Dyche. Proved more. Does job every year with little next to none in terms of quality. He keeps his team in the Premier League, which is kind of a miracle if you look at the players he's
no, but I think like we were talking about
one more thing that goes in his favor. Whenever there is a crisis in Burnley, he knows how to stop it. He knows how to stop the losing streak always, every single time.
No, but you look at Sean Dyche and you look at this. Look at the level of club Burnley is. I sort of get the feeling like Sean Dyche is a Burnley manager. I feel like Graham Potter can grow on to be maybe not next season, maybe in a couple of seasons or in five seasons, he can grow on to be.
I think he's better than Southgate. I think he's better than Southgate. Manager. And I wouldn't be mad if he was the next England manager. But if you told me I'm going to make Sean Dyche the next England manager, I'd be like, come on, man, let's not do that.
Yeah, I think any of our clubs, I feel Graham Potter will get more of our clubs than Sean Dyche would. Yeah. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
Martin, did you see Atalanta versus Real Madrid?
No, I was working. I've seen highlights yesterday from games, and actually
we have to talk about Atalanta versus Real Madrid.
I just wanted to say that I made a bet with Janos Mihalik about that game because he was saying that Real Madrid is in crisis and they're in trouble, but I still was pretty confident that they're going to handle their business in Bergamo, and from what I've seen they did. But please continue.
Well, there was a controversial red card in the game. Now, what happened was, from what I understand of the law, like when you're being tackled by the last man and they get you and not the ball, then you're gone. It's a red card, straight red. Now, we had this instance in this game, but the player who got the red card was not the last man. There was another player on the same team, another Atlanta player, closer or further away or closer to his own goal. But the ref gave the red card because he said that guy would have never been able to come over and stopped the Real Madrid player after he'd gotten past the player that fouled him. Have you ever seen anything like that? And what do you think? Is the ref seeing into the future, or should he have made that a yellow? And the guy got fouled outside the box, like right outside, not like he was in the box. So the ref is saying the other Atlanta defender in the box wouldn't have got over before the Real Madrid player took the shot. And Neil, you saw it. What do you think of it?
I thought the other guy was... I didn't think this was a last man situation because, I mean, if refs start guessing whether, you know, somebody can, in that particular system, can get to it or not, I mean, I feel like you just see where the goalkeeper is, you see where the two players are. I thought that, you know, that guy was at least equal or nearer to, you know, between the ball and the keeper. So I don't think it should have been a red.
Yeah. I think a call like that, it's like, it's calls like that that make the offside rule get changed. It's calls like that that make the handball rule get changed and the offside rule gets changed into things that we don't recognize or know what the real rule is. I think something like that, you have to play it just like how it's written. And like you said, not try to predict if a player would have made it over there or not. Like last man is last man. Second to last man is second to last man. And it's just a free kick and maybe a yellow card.
And also the fact is that red card essentially has such a huge impact on the game. So yeah, something like a red card is, unless you're absolutely sure of it, it, you know, I don't think for something like this, it should be a red.
Yeah, I agree. And then Real Madrid, like, they're a man up for most of the game. And they attack and they attack and they attack. And then finally, Mendy puts the ball in with his right foot when he's really a left-footed player. And Mendy's the guy that got fouled in the first place. So he had a game, you know, he had a really good game. And so, like, it almost feels like, I guess you have to say, and I will admit that, like, Zidane is a good coach, a really good coach, but he's also... has, like, when he was a player, he was a real player. There was no luck. He could really play. But as a coach, he's had some of the best luck a coach could have as a coach. Like sometimes he's make these substitutions and he'll put on somebody or start someone that you've never really seen in over his 5 or 4 years as a Real Madrid coach do anything before for Real Madrid. And that person will do something that game. And he's like, how the fuck did he know? And then, like, in I remember when Champions League started this season, they lost, was it to a Turkish team? Like, and Man United won their first few games. And Man United's out of the Champions League. And goddamn fucking Real Madrid just beat Atalanta on a card that maybe shouldn't have. And they probably might have not won this game if Atalanta didn't get the red card. So...
Yeah, because Atlanta essentially after that red card had to just defend.
Right, because they're
So I wouldn't be surprised if in the second leg they managed to, you know, because it's still just one goal, the difference. And I wouldn't be surprised if Atlanta threw up a surprise. Madrid isn't really playing that well right now. They have a lot of injuries too. So,
Martin, what game did you watch yesterday?
I mean, I checked Bayern, and I had this, you know, this conversation with Janusz about Bayern, because he thinks, and we actually talked on the phone today, he said that Bayern is not playing well, and they have huge problems defensively, that Sula is like 100 pounds overweight, and Pavard never, and
Sula?
Fully blossomed at Bayern, and Boateng is also not playing well, so they have problems defensively, which is true. But I think I made a comparison when I was giving my counter arguments to Janusz that Bayern Munich is like they're like coasting a little bit here and there. They're not in every game 100% committed because they know that at the end they'll probably win. So in the Bundesliga they'll probably win again. Nobody won more trophies in football in the last year than Bayern. So they don't feel like they have to be 100% in every game because some of that hunger is obviously gone. But at the same time, they are solid enough when it matters. When they need to speed it up, they will speed it up, and they did speed it up yesterday. And they showed everybody that they're still the best team in Europe, and the only possible threats to Bayern is either City or.
He froze. He froze. Thank God the internet shut him up. We'll keep it moving. We only got like 5 minutes. Right. Anyway, he came on like right at the end. I'm trying to figure out what the last thing is I want to talk about. And I guess it's the Merseyside Derby. What's your take? Derby. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I was, I mean, again, Ancelotti, you know, he's a really nice, like a very experienced big game manager. And you've seen him do this a couple of times this season. Like you go up and he knows how to like close out a game despite not playing. It's not like he's going to play. You keep making mistakes. He has a team that can make you pay for it. It's just that nothing is really working for Liverpool right now. Even from a, like an offensive point of view, they have a bunch of forwards that are, I mean, they're world class, but they're like really out of form right now.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, like we know about their issues at center back with all the injuries and stuff. Mm-hmm. But now they have
the center. Did they lose? What's his name this game to?
Henderson,
yeah.
Yeah, Henderson went out and Nat Phillips came back, which I don't think is that big of a... It may be a blessing in disguise because I feel like there have been times in the season where Nat Phillips has done well,
but he
doesn't get chances. So maybe he gets a run and he is that elusive center back who you can trust for a bunch of games.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, again, they continue playing that high line, which I really don't know if that's a when you know you have so many issues, I don't know why you keep persisting with that. You know, the couple of other things they can do, they can maybe go back, go to a three at the back and actually free Trent and Robertson to do more things offensively.
Mm-hmm.
But again, Klopp has never tried a back three, at least not in English football. I don't know if he ever tried it in his previous jobs. So
he ain't got no defenders. He got to try a back for three with no defenders. Well, he'll only be using the wing, but then his wing backs won't be able to. Will his wing backs?
Well, it actually, a lot of teams, when they don't have good center backs, that's what they do. They add that extra cover.
But then they lose. But who are they going to be the back three?
Well, it'll have to be... I think Kabak, Nat Phillips, and then if Fabinho comes back, you play Fabinho there.
Oh, okay.
And I think Fabinho is back. So, I mean, they have to try something. Like, this team right now is unrecognizable from the team that that won the league last season. And you can keep saying, you know, injuries and stuff. The fact remains that when you saw the team sheet last game, there were 9 Champions League winners in that team sheet. The drop-off should not be this low. They're close to relegation form right now in the last, I think, since Christmas. So they have to try something. I mean, you know, we all know Klopp is one of the best managers in the league, best managers in the world right now. And they still have, as I said, like all these great players. So... It won't be shocking if they can turn this around because you expect over the, you know, over a period of games for such a quality group to find answers. But yeah, it's not just a, it's been 11 games now that they've won 2 in 11. So.
All right. Martin, what do you think of the Merseyside Derby? And then we're out.
I mean, they're in a deep, deep crisis. They haven't been in a crisis like that in a long time. And I'm glad because they stole some, you know, all the spotlight from Spurs. I'm pretty happy about that. Liverpool.
Not really.
From Liverpool. Keep going. So that's good. I think they're in trouble. They have to start winning. They'll be out of top 4 and I think out of top 6 too because if they will be not able to finish top 4, I don't think they want to finish top 6. I don't think they want to play Europa League. Yeah. it doesn't seem like a good deal for them. So they have to go get better. And I'm sure there will be a lot of buying in the summer because it looks like this formula is kind of finished offensively. They need to shake things up. Minamino kind of didn't pay off, so they loan him to Southampton.
And he scored an amazing goal for Southampton.
This
weekend.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, shit, that's what Liverpool bought.
That is another thing. Like, Liverpool, you know, there's so many concerns with injuries and stuff. Why are you still loaning out players? Like, if you're worried about squad depth, this is not the time for you to go and give somebody game time so that he is fit for next season. You have a crisis on your hands this season.
Yeah, it's mainly defensively, though. The injuries really, really hurt them a lot.
Yeah,
I mean, you have to say that. I mean, it makes huge difference to play with them. Any center back, pretty much. You know? Not one of them is healthy. And we're talking about arguably the best center back in the business in Van Dijk.
You're losing your Messi of defense.
Yeah, and then Matip and Gomez. You know,
not Messi. You're losing your Lewandowski of defense. Imagine Bayern without Lewandowski.
Yeah, Bayern without Lewandowski, Müller, and Coman. You know, like or someone else.
The best defense in the Premier League. The best center backs. They're gone.
Yeah, Henderson is playing as a center back, and he's not.
And then he got injured.
And he's not a center back.
Yeah.
But they still have like a world class goalkeeper, a world class left back, a world class right back. You know?
Without center backs, you can't play football. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. That you have center backs, you just don't trust them, right? And knew about the center backs issue back whenever Van Dijk got injured. It took till the entirety of January for center backs till. Why did you wait till the last day of the transfer window to get center backs?
Because they tried to figure it out with their midfielders in the back, and it didn't work. And they say,
that's the definition of insanity, right? You keep trying the same thing over and over again.
It's not an easy system to just blend into right away. You know, like they play a specific. There's a specific way of football. So what is the guarantee that you buy Vestergaard from Southampton and he'll fit in right away? You know, like he might also.
Southampton's not selling him.
But to your point about that it takes time, therefore, you know, you fix this on the first day of the window. You don't wait till the last day of the window and get some two guys from the worst defense in the championship and the worst defense in the Bundesliga.
Brentford is doing pretty good.
No, this guy is from Preston, not then.
Okay.
And the other guy is from Schalke, who haven't like won a game in... They had a record of like just not winning games.
Mm-hmm.
So I found like very either a lack of planning or they had some plans and none of them worked out, which for a club like Liverpool's stature, you shouldn't be leaving so many things to chance.
Yeah, but it's a bad luck, man. It never happens that you lose the center back.
Yeah, I'll give them I'll be like, shit happened to them badly, perfectly. And it's just falling apart at the back. It's lots of injuries. But my gift to them is, hey, use Naby Keita. He was a part of your premiership win. And you're putting in Shaqiri, Oxlade-Chamberlain, and the Williams kid, which is cool. But use Naby Keita. He's there. I don't understand. It's the same thing. When I say, hey, use Bernardo Silva, that's when, you know, Man City turned it around. Of course, you know, I'm an Oracle, baby. And I'm telling you, why is Naby Keita not in the game? All right. Martin, thanks for joining late, but I got a 7 o'clock Zoom. I got to join. So that's why I got to get out. Aaron Brungard, thanks for producing this. Neil, thanks for coming through again. Martin, it was good to see your face for only 5 minutes. Still too much. And you missed us bashing Spurs. We didn't really.
I'm glad I did.
Yeah, you came on time. Perfect. And we out. Pat, like, subscribe, and thank you. One love, everybody.
Yeah. Peace. Bye.